Why do I conduct my show in this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here!
Hello, I'm good, Joe.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at rantsradio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays.
And it is Wednesday, 6:15 p.m., January, what is it, the 26th, January 26, 2005. How is everybody doing out there? And here we are in the beautiful Studio Al in lovely Decatur, Georgia. Rick is here with me. How you doing, Rick?
Hey there, Joe.
How was your week?
It was good. It was good, except for the Falcons losing.
Yeah, well, I'm not too surprised about that. I mean, you know, we talk. You know, I don't talk sports too much on the show, but let's talk about that for a second because a lot of people were really gung ho about, you know, us going to the NFC Championship, and I was like, look, you know, the Eagles are the best team they've played all year. If you look at the Falcons schedule this year, they didn't play anybody. They didn't play anybody worth a damn, to be perfectly honest. And St. Louis in the playoffs, you knew the Falcons were going to run all over them. I mean, they were getting hot near the end, but. The biggest win I thought the Falcons had all year was that tight win against Carolina near the end of the year.
That's right.
And they pretty much knocked them out of the playoffs. The last two losses that they had in the regular season, I didn't really think about because they were benching everybody, you know, just resting everybody up. I predicted before the season started that they would win 12 games. They won 11, but if it had been a situation where they needed to play their starters, they would have probably won that 12th game at least, and maybe 13. You never know. But since they rested everybody in the last two games, they wound up not winning. But they kicked the crap out of St. Louis, and then they ran into a team that just plays that much better. I mean, everybody knew that the Eagles were probably the best team in the NFC, and there wasn't anybody really doubting that.
Well, they deserved their win.
Yes, they did. They played hard, and they're going to get their asses kicked by the Patriots. And it's as simple as that.
Oh, the Patriots are too much.
Patriots are just, oh my, the way they took apart the Steelers, and the Steelers are a much more physical team.
Well, you expected much more from them, actually, from the Steelers.
Yes, you did.
Because they took apart the Patriots earlier this season.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's just the thing. You know, Coach Belichick is probably the best coach in football right now. I mean, I like Jim Moore, and it was his first year, though. He still got a lot to learn. Did you see how angry he was in the press conference after?
Oh, I saw him throw his headset down.
Well, yeah, but in the press conference after.
No, I didn't see that.
He was getting a little upset with, you know, he said, I'm happy with what we've done, but, you know, I'm here to win Super Bowls. And I like that attitude. You know, he's got that right mindset. But all the Falcons fans and stuff, look, you know, it was a good season. You know, they did much better.
Yeah, they
did much better than anybody anticipated. They went all the way to the NFC Championship game with a completely revamped defense. And, you know, where they should be proud. And let's talk about this for a minute, because I've talked about sports, and I know a lot of working people get down on professional athletes because they make so much money. They make so much more. But I always look at it like, look, football and baseball and basketball, these are multi-billion dollar industries. They make a lot of money. And there are so few athletes that get to play. What? How many pro athletes are there in professional football? Maybe a couple of hundred at the most?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
What is, how many is it, like 40 per team? No, more than a couple of hundred. Maybe about 700 or 800. Because it's, what, how many teams? Like 24 teams?
Yeah.
As like how many? What's the roster on a football
team? Let's
just
say 1,000.
Let's just say 1,000 for the sake of argument. But that's not a lot of people. You know, the population of the country is, what, 300 million? And out of that, only 1,000, which is like 1/3 of 1% or something like that, get to play professional football. That's not a lot of people. And it's about maybe 1,000 in baseball and about, you know, less than that in basketball and in hockey, which is in a lockout right now. It's not a strike. It's a lockout. So very few people get to play at that level. And it looks so easy because these guys are such great athletes. And they really, really do deserve the money that they get. I'm sorry. That's the truth. You know, people bitch about it all the time. But the reason why they're bitching about it is because their own lives aren't that great. They see we're making shitty money. Why should this guy make so much for, you know, just for playing a game? You get out there in that field and get your ass hit by...
Well, that's true. That's true. But at the same time, it's like the proportion of... How much a corporate manager makes or a CEO?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's way out of proportion to the rest of society.
Well, the difference is, though, a CEO, like George Steinbrenner, who owns the Yankees, okay, one of the most powerful owners in the game, he makes enough money to pay all these guys. Think about that. His organizations make enough money to pay all these guys. Well, that's another point. I'll get to that. My wife was chiming in. I'll get to that in a second. But people do not pay George Steinbrenner. They won't pay, you know, a nickel to see George Steinbrenner sign documents all day or talk on the phone all day. See what I'm saying?
I've seen the ad.
Yeah. You know? Well, yeah, I didn't even think about that. But they won't pay a penny for that. You know, the athletes are the game. The athletes are what everybody goes and pays and sees. You know, and like my wife just pointed out, these guys have a very short shelf life. Of the 1,000 or so people who get into the NFL, something like 70% of those never play more than 4 or 5 years. Granted, they make a ton of money during those 4 or 5 years, and some of them on the low end of the scale, you're still not talking about, you know, the huge sums that the big stars get, because I think the low end is what, about a couple of million a year. That's the low end for football.
Might even be lower than that. I think the average was somewhere around $750,000.
And the average is inflated because there are people at the very top.
If you're a backup offensive lineman, I don't think you're making that much money.
Right. And people are saying, oh, Michael Vick should feel real bad, or, you know, they look downcast. I said, look, let's get real here. These guys are living in a completely different world than you or I live in. They never have to worry about where their next meal is coming from. They never have to worry about, you know, all the little things that we worry about that are devastating things. I mean, some people, you miss a couple of days work and you can wind up losing your house. I mean, that's what happened to me. You know, we wound up losing our apartment because I was out of work for a while.
Well, he's a $100 million baby.
Yeah, exactly.
He should take us to dinner.
Yeah, he should. He should. Let's call him. Michael Vick, if you're out there listening, we deserve a nice dinner, damn it.
We like it at a nice restaurant, too.
You know, my ex-landlord, Keith, he used to work at Ruth Chris Steakhouse as a waiter there, and he used to bring over leftovers. And he
That'll
was talking
do.
About he used to talk about the celebrities that would come in there, and Greg Maddux was a regular, and he said we would comp his meal. And I'm like, what are you comping his meal for? It's not like he can't afford a $50 or $60 steak. He can afford that. That's shitting money. He wipes his ass with $100 bills for crying out loud. What are you comping his meal? Comp my meal. Let Maddux pay for it.
It's all the marketing budget.
It's all the marketing budget, you know. And But the thing about it is, obviously, they want to be the best they are in their profession. And nobody denies their desire to be, you know, the best in their chosen field. And everybody should aspire to that. I don't have a problem with that sort of ambition. But let's just get a little real here about, you know, what the kind of money that they make, what that means in the real world. I would rather, pay to see an athlete, Michael Vick. And I love watching him play. I'm really more of a Michael Vick fan than I am a Falcons fan. See what I'm saying? Because every time he gets the ball, I want to see what the hell's going on.
What happened to him on Sunday?
Well, just better defense, you know, good secondary. I don't think the weather conditions were that much. He's still learning the game. He's what, 20, 23, 24 years old? He's still learning the game. And there's really nothing more than that. I mean, I don't know why everybody should be so disappointed, you know, why he should be disappointed in his performance. He did great considering, you know, how little he really knows about what's going on. And considering the overall team the Falcons have, they're a good team, but they're not. You look at, like, when the 49ers of the 80s were starting to build up their team, you could tell that they had a look in their eye and a way of bearing themselves that these guys were going to be a very, very difficult team to beat, very professional. The Steelers of the 70s, I'm old enough to remember them. These guys had a look in their eyes like, you know, you're really going to have to work to beat us. And even then, they still lost. They won like 4 Super Bowls in 6 years. But there were still years where they didn't win a Super Bowl.
Well, are the Falcons getting that gleam?
I think we have the beginnings of it, but they need to get much better personnel than they have right now. And they're in the NFC, which is the worst of the two, which is weird because 5 or 10 years ago it was the NFC that was ruling the roost. I mean, it used to be the NFC championship game was the Super Bowl. It wasn't until the Denver Broncos broke that streak that it was something like 8 or 9 years the NFC won every Super Bowl, you know, between the Niners and the Packers and the Cowboys. The Broncos broke that, and then you have the Patriots come along. And, of course, who is the Patriots coach? Bill Belichick, who used to coach the New York Giants, an NFC team. And all the NFC guys are, you know, coaching in the AFC now, and they're having that toughness.
Well, we lost, but I got to say I'm not bitter.
No, I'm not bitter at all. Not about that anyway. And
which kind of brings us to the topic of discussion.
Well, it comes at the topic of the main show, really. I want to talk about that because I have one of my regulars, and I mentioned him last show that you were here, a guy named Beachon. I know the guy. His name is Bruce Lewis. In person, he's a great guy. Very intelligent, very talented artist. I haven't showed you any of his work. I've got some hidden around somewhere. I've got an example of his work. He's a brilliant artist. In fact, he drew that picture up there. I got a poster on the wall.
Nice.
He's a very talented artist and very creative guy. But online, when he writes stuff in the comments section, he's just a prick. He's an absolute, total, complete asshole.
In what way?
Just real snotty, you know, kind of like, you know, George Bush won, you suck. And it's really hard to explain. He's got a very intellectual attitude. He'll quote shit in Spanish and just assume that if you don't know it, you're an idiot. If you don't know what he was saying.
Is this a Bushy?
He's not really, you know, he's a monarchist. He claims to be a monarchist. He wholeheartedly believes, or at least he states, that the New World Order, because I've talked about what I call the Pax Liberalis, the global peace that's going to come, a single global political entity. And he says, no, when that happens, it's going to be a new Holy Roman Empire with the Pope at the top. And I'm like, what are you, fucking nuts? I mean, like, there wouldn't be enough. There would be enough among Christians. There would be a lot of people fighting that. The Southern Baptists here are going to put up with a dictatorship run by the Pope. You know, they're not going to put up with that crap at all. But at any rate, finally, I had enough of him. And there was another right winger who used to post, who was a lot more immature than Bruce was. But I just banned him from commenting. I was like, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of arguing with you. There's no point in it anymore because you just argue for the sake of making yourself look good. And the final comment was that it was something like, if you can get over all this bitterness that you have. And I was furious because he is so trivializing how I feel about what's going on. I'm not bitter. You know, I am not bitter. I mean, bitter is a term. Angry and frustrated. But bitter is a term, like I said, that trivializes how myself and others, and I'm sure you feel the same way, how I feel about what's going on. I mean, would Germans who were appalled at what was going on in Poland when Germany invaded and occupied Poland be considered just bitter because the Weimar Republic they supported, despite its failings, fell? Is that just bitter? Look, they're hurting kids and shooting Jews in Poland. We don't care. You know, you loser. Weimar Republic lost, man. Nazis rule. You know, and that's basically the attitude that they have. And despite all the military successes the Nazis had at the very beginning, you know, between Poland and France and all that other stuff, you know, I'm sure there were a lot of Germans who were like, this is crazy. This is going
to have to be some questioning.
There would have to be some people. I mean, they all weren't that way. The White Rose Society, in fact, was a group of young intellectuals who were writing anti-Nazi propaganda and distributing it by hand until they got found out and killed. And I feel the same thing. I mean, yeah, we ran over Iraq in about 2 weeks, But, of course, the occupation has been long and bloody. We've lost far more men during the occupation than we did during the war.
We lost 31 today.
We lost 31?
At least 31.
In soldiers? I hadn't seen anything about that.
There was a helicopter crash of some kind. I haven't heard all the
news. I saw that earlier today. 31
soldiers killed in that. And then I think a couple others in roadside bombs
and it's just
fights or whatever.
On and on and on. And, you know, and I'm sure that in the long term, this is going to seriously hurt the United States of America. I mean, I'm a proud American, and I'm proud at the things that we've accomplished. What flag is that on the fucking moon? That's the American flag. You know, that's not the German flag. That's not the French flag. That's not the Italian flag. As great as those countries are and all the things that they have accomplished in the past throughout all their deep and rich history, none of them put a man on the moon. We put a fucking man on the moon. You know what I mean? That's an extraordinary accomplishment. And we got him back. That's an even more extraordinary accomplishment. There and back.
Not just once.
Not just once. I mean, that to me, that is the most significant event in the history of the human race. Because of all the other things that we've done, everything else we've done on this planet. This is something we did on another sphere. You know, the closest sphere to us. That's extraordinary.
It seems kind of like what we're doing now is on another planet.
Well, yeah, in a different type of way. But the thing about it is, you look at all the stuff that we accomplish, and all of it's going to get thrown away because, you know, the United States is going down because of this. The right-wingers are in gloat mode right now, but they just don't understand because they're too busy being full of themselves. You know, like Bill O'Reilly, I heard him the other day, a thing where he was bragging about how he had been in combat. My wife and I were talking about this earlier. He had been in combat. He was never in combat. He was in a reporter when there was a firefight going on, but he was not in combat. And this one guy called him up and called him on it, and he's just like, shut up and get off my show. You know, you can't compare to what I've done and what I've seen, you know. Just full of themselves with no reason for it, you know.
I think bitter is where they want us to be.
Well, bitter...
Because bitter implies that there's no hope. There's nothing you can do. Well, I just accept whatever is dished out to me, and I feel badly about it, but there's a hopelessness about it. But anger is a much better word, and I think that the people are hunkering down.
Well, like I said, it just trivializes it. You know, bitter is how you feel at when the Falcons lose. You know, or if the Falcons had lost because of a really controversial call. You know what I mean?
That would be worth being bitter.
That would
about.
Be bitter. Bitter is how you feel when you publicly break up with somebody and they start, you know, having more fun in a relationship and, in fact, you know, start to rub it in your face. That's when you feel bitter. Bitter is when one of your coworkers gets a promotion that you think you deserved. You know, that's bitter. But and bitter is how the right-wingers felt for many, many years as they watched liberal policies make the country prosperous, militarily powerful, and basically disprove everything that they had believed in all those years. And now, of course, that they're back on the top, you know, that they finally managed to weasel their way into positions of power again, they figure they can just do anything they want. Tip O'Neill, the great Speaker of the House for the Democratic Party for many, many years. It was the last great Democratic Speaker of the House because he was Speaker under Reagan. He once said that Democrats had done their job too well. They had made people rich enough to want to vote Republican. And Republicans are going to turn around and start making people poor enough to want to vote Democratic again. That's what's going to happen. And the question really is how long before enough people say that's it and just put an end to it. You know? And
I don't think it'll be in 4 years.
No,
it's
going to
take longer than that.
It's going to take longer than that.
It's going to have to be a very dramatic fallout in the economy of some sense.
A huge fallout.
And it's coming, I think. The euro may become the denomination of preference around the world.
I think it's already starting.
People may some of the Chinese apparently own a third of all of our government bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And when they start cashing these things in, or if they decide to cash it in, then you're going to see some widespread panic at these policies.
Especially when they're seeing how irresponsible we are being with our economy. Because what we're doing is just irresponsible. I mean, pretending there's a huge crisis in Social Security in order to dismantle it, which is what they wanted to do since 1935 when it was installed to begin with.
Wasn't it interesting, Senator Allen from Virginia yesterday?
George Allen?
George Allen.
Ex-football coach.
The football coach's son. But he he was talking about don't talk about Condoleezza Rice in a bad way because it will influence the way people think about us overseas. Mm-hmm. Well, they're already in despair.
They were you know, the Republicans were the ones who started doing stuff like that because they were dissing Bill Clinton and Bill Clinton's people to, you know, foreign ambassadors and stuff like that, just speaking bad about them at functions, public and private. And that had always, until the Republicans started doing that, always been kind of a no-no. I mean, politics ended at the shore. You didn't discuss it to, you know, ambassadors or people from other countries. You just didn't do it. It wasn't done. And the Republicans just started to do it because, you know, these are people who think we are God's gift to the world. We are the rightful leadership. And we can do whatever we want. And everybody else is just a loser. And that's what their attitude is.
Well, I'll tell you about better. Who ought to be better? The world ought to be better. The world, Europe ought to be better. Asia ought to be better. Everybody who's watching all of these policies in Iraq and the global warming treaties being walked around and all that shit ought to be better. That's, and that bitterness is something to worry about. Mm-hmm. It's that kind of bitterness when you kill 100,000 Iraqis. They've got families.
Sure.
Right? They've got cousins. They've got people out there who are going to get back at you in some way.
And eventually, it's gonna turn up and bite us in our ass.
Comes down to roost.
That's right. And every empire, you know, if you look historically, every empire that has fallen partly because they spent too much on the military that was overtaxing their economies. And we had started to get away from that. I mean, the United States during the 50s and the 60s, they wanted to promote peaceful ways of resolving. Granted, it didn't always work. Obviously, we had the Korean conflict in Vietnam, but of course, who was mainly pushing behind that? The anti-communist fascist faction of the United States, and of course, anybody who said anything against them was labeled, you know, a traitor.
Well, we can't
commie.
Let Lyndon Johnson off the hook, though.
Well, no, we can't let Lyndon Johnson off the hook, but you know, when you listen to the private recordings of Lyndon Johnson when he talks about this war, when he talked about Vietnam, he was just heartbroken about it. You know, he wasn't gloating over it. He was just like, this is a god-awful mess, but I don't know how to get out of it.
Isn't that a really scary position to be in?
It's a horrible position to be in.
Where you can't admit that you're wrong, but at the same time you know you're wrong?
You know, he knew, and he was saying it privately, well, you know, that just that the war and the way they were running it was wrong. But publicly, he couldn't say that. And Senator George McGovern and other senators, what was his name? Eugene McCarthy. You know, they said if we had known that LBJ felt this way privately, then we could have gone in and had a talk with him and we could have worked something out where we could have gone out honorably.
But the difference is George Bush doesn't feel
that. No, he doesn't feel that.
You could have however many body bags come home, however many maimed soldiers come home, and it's not going to matter a hoot for him. He's out there to follow his mission from God, from wherever it's coming from.
Right. And, you know, the thing about it is he and his followers, if the pendulum swings again back in the other direction, which it eventually will.
It will.
They'll feel all bitter. But you know what? What would he have to feel bitter? What would George Bush have to feel bitter about in his entire life? He's had everything handed to him. He's had all the money in the world. He's never had to worry about whether he's going to have enough rent. Life is so boring for him that he's got to make shit up. Him and all of his other friends, they're so boring for them, they got to make shit up in order to make their lives more interesting.
Impeachment would make it interesting.
Impeachment would, but that's not going to happen. You know that's not going to happen.
Well, we can only hope.
No, it's not going to happen. Let me tell you something. You know, we really impeached – I mean, really, we would have not just impeached Nixon but kicked him out of office. And there was broad support in both the Democratic and Republican parties for that. And part of that was because you had to press on, you know, the side of goodness in that sense, because what Nixon did was nothing compared to what Bush did. But it was what's the word? His integrity that was being questioned. Not just what he did in the, you know, the nasty political stuff that was going on, you know, breaking into the Democratic headquarters of the Watergate Hotel, but just him covering up and trying to find scapegoats for it and just refusing to admit that they had done something wrong. If he had been upfront about it more, people would have been a little kinder to it. Because Nixon made his entire reputation and his entire political power based upon who, you know, who he smashed. And it was his own hubris is the word that the Greeks used 2,500 years ago with when the Athenians fell. It was his own hubris that made him fall. But things that George Bush and his administration doing are hundreds of times worse. Because Nixon inherited Vietnam. You know, he inherited it from Johnson, who inherited it from Kennedy, who inherited it from Eisenhower. Eisenhower was the first one to send people in there. He just sent some advisors over. Kennedy likely, and we don't know for sure because he was killed, but it's possible that he was going to start sending our troops back from Vietnam. And, of course, this was pissing off all the war profiteers, which is a possibility as to why he was killed. I don't know for sure. I'm not making any claims, but it certainly makes a lot of sense. LBJ inherited it, and according to the Oliver Stone movie, he, in order to be, you know, become president, he knew about the assassination, and he struck a deal that you can kill Kennedy, and I'll keep your war so long as I get to be president. Which, you know, it wound up killing him in the long run because he died from that. I really believe he died from moral sickness over that. Nixon
didn't
take
him long either.
No, not
out of office for what, 4 years.
Not even that, I don't think. And he passed away. And he would have won re-election easily if he had decided to run in '68. And Nixon didn't give a shit. He didn't care about the Cambodians or the Vietnamese. He really didn't care. He was just using political leverage.
But Joe, you don't think that there's a lot of hubris on this? In this president?
There is a ton of hubris in it. There is far more hubris. But you know the thing about it is they've worked hard for 30 years to buy the press, to buy the message. And that's why they're not going to face their crimes. The reason why Clinton was impeached was because they had the press and they had the hubris to go out and try to get the guy kicked out of office for having a blowjob, for Christ's sake. They said, well, it wasn't a blowjob, it was the lying about it, you know? And it was such a trumped-up charge. You know, it was such a trumped-up charge.
It was a setup charge.
It was a setup. You know, basically what they did with Bill Clinton, and this is what surprised my wife when I first told her about it, is they got him under oath. And they started questioning him about shit and just kept, you know, firing questions at him that had nothing to do with the Whitewater investigation until he said something that could have been interpreted as being perjury. And specifically speaking, it wasn't perjury because the perjury rap wasn't that he never said he had an affair, because he said he had an affair, but that he said it happened in November and Monica Lewinsky said it happened in August or some bullshit like that. That's really pushing perjury. That's like if I got pulled over by a cop who said I was doing 120 when I was only doing 90, and I admitted I was doing 90, speeding, but, you know, there's a bigger penalty for going that much faster. You know, they wouldn't nail me on perjury for that.
Well, do they nail Rumsfeld or Rice when they testify before Congress?
No, and, you know, Bush himself.
Can they do that?
They could if they had the balls to do it, and if the press would push the issue long enough. And the press is not pushing the issue. They're just basically, you know, giving out the party line, and especially after 9/11. So, look, let's God, we've been talking for almost 26 minutes. Let's take a little break, and we're going to talk about Johnny Carson for a few minutes, because Johnny passed away over the weekend on Sunday. And Johnny Carson, you and I, Rick, are of the generation where we got to watch Johnny on a fairly regular basis. And we're going to talk a little about him, and we're going to play a couple clips from him before we do that. So
I look forward.
Yep. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Tucker Joe Radio Show.
You so often, and you sit here, and I heard that you played a little drum. You didn't get up with Louis to do a thing.
No.
But with me, you are going to sing. And he didn't know about this either. It's all out here. You know what hurts me? I didn't even have to pull him. He got up. This is ad lib, isn't it, John? You didn't know this was going to happen.
You know it.
This. Well, I feel this way. I know. Do you like singing?
Yeah. You see, you do it so great. You're a great performer.
Well, would you like?
I feel uncomfortable singing. You see.
Well, would you like to? You know the little things that you see. That would you like to become the Frank Sinatra's Como?
Yeah, that area.
Yeah. What? Where?
Right in that area. That's good.
What area? How far can you move? Oh, you mean in that?
Yeah.
Well, in it. That's easy. Everyone has talent.
Uh-huh.
I don't say what time, but they've got... Now we're going
to
go.
Anything to sing. What am I going to sing?
No, sing anything you know. I'll sing it with you to show you that two human beings can deliver. Now, if you watch me, I'll show you how that thing is. Now, nobody asked you, Skit.
Yeah, keep out of my eyes.
No, you've had yours. Yeah. You've had the day.
Telling him, partner.
Yeah. Now, what? Pardon already.
Yeah.
You take the microphone. I don't need it.
Oh, I
was in show business before they had an electrician on it. Now we have to get that little rock we have. Does he have to play?
Well, it'll help me a little bit, Harley. It'll help me a little bit.
Yeah, but it kills the song. Make it a little more. Let's go. What are you cleaning up? I thought you couldn't sing.
Oh, I was getting ready here in case we're going to do something.
It's very clear.
Oh, it's clear.
Our love is here to stay.
Our love is here to stay.
Not for a year.
You got a good voice, boy.
But forever.
Forever.
And a day.
And a day.
The radio.
The radio.
And the telephone.
And the telephone.
And the movies.
And the movies.
That we know.
That we know.
May just be passing.
Passing
fancy.
Use the hand.
And in time.
Wait, I don't think I need you anymore.
But forever and a day.
I need you.
All right.
The water may crumble.
Yes, it'll crumble.
The Rockies may tumble. They're only made of clay.
Yes.
But
our love is here.
Now
listen, anyone can sing with a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
That's new. But in the old days, they really had something going for them. You know when Jeanette Nelson used to sing, Jeanette MacDonald, you got that. You've got a quality. From the top.
Love, 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 love.
Nelson.
It's very clear. Our love is here to stay.
Why is our love here? Why is
not
it here?
Not for a year. But forever and today.
Passing fancy.
Passing fancy.
And in time.
Yes.
They may go.
Don't leave me, Johnny. Don't leave me.
But our love is here.
He said our love is here.
I just said
our love is here.
Repetition, silver play, that's French. Our love is here.
I haven't had that much fun on this show in 2 years. You're too hard, Dad.
The late, great Johnny Carson with the late, great Pearl Bailey from a very rare and hard-to-find album called The Tonight Show's Greatest Hits. And I actually had that album many years ago, and I just, believe it or not, pulled that off from the Internet just a few minutes ago, which is why I love the Internet so much. You can get some. They were having, since Johnny passed away over the weekend, they had a flood. Hi, I'm Joe Vecchio, and this is the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And, of course, I welcome all my listeners at rantradio.com and those listening in at the White Rose Society. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And I'm here with Rick. How you doing, Rick?
I'm doing good. I think he was late and he was great, but much more than that. He was immortal. They threw away the mold on Johnny Carson.
Yeah, he was one of the great figures in television history. I mean, you talk about, people always make lists about who were the greatest people on television, the greatest entertainers. And of course, television had a lot of great ones. Dick Van Dyke, Jackie Gleason. And for the females, you had people like Lucy and Carol Burnett and Roseanne, you know, powerful women who changed the industry, and powerful men who changed the industry. And Carson had more influence than any of them. He was on for 30 years, from 1962 to 1992. He was on the airwaves every night at 11:30, almost every night. And he was probably the single most powerful man on television pretty much the entire run of that 30 years, especially later on, from like the late 60s all the way through to the end to 92, the most powerful man in television. You know, I like Letterman. I don't care much for Leno. I never have. I like Letterman okay, and I like some of the other talk show people, but you know what? None of them are just anything compared to Johnny Carson, who was made you so comfortable when you just talked to him. You know, and he was a smart guy, but he wasn't a super intellectual. He was talented. He was as funny a joke man as you would want, because he had a wonderful sense of timing. But he always made his guests feel comfortable. Do you have a Johnny moment that you remember, that something that you liked in particular that you can recall?
Well, I was trying to think about all of that. I always think about Ed McMahon being drunk, basically, mm-hmm. or those that fellow from the zoo.
Oh, Joan Embry.
St. Louis Zoo?
Joan Embry, who was the San Diego Zoo.
San Diego Zoo.
And there was a guy and a girl. Birds. Jim Fowler, that was the other guy.
Jim Fowler. He's still showing up, isn't he?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if he goes on Leno's show or not.
He just looks older now.
Did you know, I didn't even realize this, Jay Leno never even mentioned Johnny when he first took over the Tonight Show, the first show. He did not mention Johnny at all.
Really?
Could you imagine that? That's, you know, Bart Kopp on BartKopp.com talked about that. He said it was one of the biggest fuck-ups in show business history, that he did not recognize, because that was a big fight. If people don't, maybe guys nowadays don't remember this, because a lot of my listeners are fairly young and probably never saw Johnny, and they didn't know the big fight going on about when he retired and whether it was going to be Leno or Letterman.
Over,
yeah, because Letterman had kind of like, there was like a verbal agreement between him and NBC. And Letterman was a big star. He had done, you know, the Late Night with David Letterman.
But he also did a lot of replacement slots for Johnny.
Oh, yeah. Although his regular replacement was Jay Leno at the end. In fact,
was he? Okay.
Yeah, Leno was his regular guy, because David Letterman went to do Late Night, you know, and he had that show on NBC for many years. In fact, they kept Letterman under contract for like a whole year before he started Late Night, where he didn't do much of anything. Letterman actually had an afternoon show for a short time before he took over Late Night.
Is that right?
Yes, he did. And but when Johnny announced his retirement, it sent shockwaves through the entire industry. And NBC had a kind of a verbal agreement with Letterman saying, you know, you will take over the Tonight Show when Johnny leaves. But there was nothing in writing. And at the time, Leno was fairly popular as a regular co-host of the Tonight Show. So there was a big fight about who was going to get what and where Letterman was going to go. And Letterman did not want to stay on doing Late Night. He wanted the 11:30 slot. He wanted the Tonight Show. And CBS finally offered him a whole shitload of money to come over to CBS and put together a show. And Letterman did not know what to do. So he called Johnny and said, you know, if you were in this position, what would you do? Because Johnny was trying real hard not to give him any real advice, because he was like, look, this is the decision that you have to make. This is a decision all performers make when you get to a certain point. You know, where are you going to go? What are you going to do? You know, when you have an opportunity, do you take it? Or, you know, do you allow the networks to do what they think is right and just go under their opinion? And Johnny said if it was him, he would probably go ahead and take the CBS deal. And that's what made Letterman. It's interesting to note that Johnny never appeared on The Tonight Show after Leno took over. Never appeared on that in his retirement. But he did reappear twice on The Letterman Show, once in the studio and once as a very, very brief cameo when Letterman went out to Hollywood to do a few shows. And there was Johnny was tremendously loyal to Letterman. And I was talking with my wife about this earlier, about Joan Rivers. Now, Joan Rivers was the original regular co-host, because when Johnny was on vacation, when Johnny was on vacation, he had a plethora of people who would take over, and a lot of different. Kermit the Frog once hosted a show as a co-host, which must have been interesting for the guests coming on. And but after a while, Joan Rivers was becoming very, very popular, and she was offered a show by Fox, and she accepted it, but she never talked to Johnny about it. Johnny would not have had a problem with her taking the show. But he thought it was very rude for her to have just gone ahead and taken it without, you know, at least talking to him, Leno, because they had plans for her. You know, there was a lot of money, you know, not messed up, but put into her. And, you know, her show on Fox finally flopped, and she does, you know, the red carpet stuff. But hurting Johnny.
Possibly the best preserved person in the history since Tutu, whatever that mummy is from Egypt.
Oh, Tutankhamun.
Tutankhamun, there you go.
Well, you know, Joan is one of those people, if she gets one more facelift, she's going to have a beard.
It's going to explode.
She's going
to
explode. But she pissed Johnny off. And Johnny is not the type of person that you pissed off because of the power that he had in the industry. He wouldn't talk to her, didn't want to know anything about her, and you know, it really, really affected her. But it wasn't, you know, but when she was on his show regularly, he did everything he could to help her, just like he did everything he could to help a lot of stars. Bette Midler,
so many got their start.
Oh,
there.
God. Bette Midler, Letterman himself, Steve Martin got a big boost.
Steve Martin, out of Seinfeld.
Jerry Seinfeld, Drew Carey, Roseanne. I remember seeing Roseanne the first time she was on Johnny Carson, the first time she made an appearance. And it was, you know, just looking back at her. But That bit that we played with Pearl Bailey, which is one of the classic Johnny bits, and there were so many on that album, and you listen to the performers and the stuff that they had on there. I mean, George Carlin had a wonderful bit. There was
Well, let me ask you, can we make some of those tracks available to our listeners? Is that possible?
I could, but I have to work on it for a little while. I have to, just because whoever it is that put those files up on the internet, he just basically recorded the entire sides of the albums, so he didn't separate them out by track. There was never a CD done. This was a total vinyl album, so these clips are very, very rare. In fact, I could take these things and I could make a CD out of it. And if I wanted to be really, really illegal, I could maybe sell a few copies to people, but I wouldn't do that because the technology nowadays is so much different. But look at not just with Johnny, but look at the different world that he lived in. He got out in 92 before things started getting really, really nasty, because that was when Bill Clinton got elected and the right-wing hate machine was just starting to pull into second gear. You know, it's in third gear right now with Bush and all that. But when Clinton got in, you know, how long was it before they were doing the impeachment? Was it 4 years, 3 years before they actually did they impeach him before 96?
No, it was 98 they tried.
It was 98.
Yeah.
Okay, so he had been in. This is the guy who was a popular president, and they had just, you know, just reamed all over him. And Johnny made fun of politicians. He made fun of all politicians, Republican or Democratic. And it was fact. It was 93, I think, when he was awarded the Medal of Freedom or something like that, a Kennedy honor. A special medal, and Clinton was presiding over it. There were a lot of guys, a lot of big stars, who basically looked at themselves as kind of like presidential entertainers. They would go out and they knew the president. Frank Sinatra was a huge Kennedy supporter, but he did songs. He did.
It's interesting how that. Just a little sidebar here, Joe. You know what happened to Sinatra? He was a big Kennedy guy.
Yeah.
Right. But then when Bobby was going after the mob, there were certain ties to Frank.
Well, yeah.
And so the Kennedys walked away from Frank, apparently wouldn't come out to his Palm Springs home,
mm-hmm.
and just basically washed their hands of him. And at that point, he said, to hell with the Kennedys, I'm going to be a Republican.
Well,
and he was.
But he still did performances. That was the word I was looking for. He did performances for all presidents. He did them for LBJ. He did them for Nixon. He did it for Reagan. He did it for Carter. He did it for Clinton.
He's a White House guy.
He was a White House guy. I mean, that was he was a man who was in the halls of power. And in fact, on one of the when the Rat Pack was in vogue, was in its heyday. That's the word I was looking for. See, I'm a radio show guy. I can't think of the right words. All right. Johnny was actually an MC at a famous one that they showed. They showed it on TV Land. I should have recorded it. I never got a chance to record it. But Johnny was like the MC. And, you know, the Rat Pack, for those of you who are not familiar, that was basically Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, and Sammy Davis Jr. And they had other guys. Joey Bishop was in there. What was the British guy's name who was in there? And
well, he was related to the Kennedys.
Yeah.
What was his name?
And, what's her name? Liza Minnelli. As the female singer.
Liza Minnelli.
Yeah, and so they would do concerts. I mean, you're talking about going to a concert, you've seen Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., and or Liza Minnelli, and or Joey Bishop, the comedian. I mean, these were the top of the top at the time, and it was a tremendous concert. Let me get a drink of water here. Professional radio. Hang on. Excuse me. But Johnny was right up there. In that, I mean, he wasn't a member of the Rat Pack, but he was in that level of talent. The thing about Frank with Kennedy, by the way, is that what happened was Frank used some of his mob connections to help Kennedy win Illinois.
There you go.
In the 60 election. But Robert Kennedy was dead set on...
It was Robert, yes,
yeah,
you're right.
He was dead set on fighting corruption in the Union, of which there was a lot. And, you know, and Sinatra felt betrayed by that, and probably he probably should have felt betrayed. But, you know, politics is politics. You know, and the Kennedys played the power game as well as anybody. They did some very sleazy things, like I was telling Kathy earlier. I mean, a lot of presidents do sleazy things. What the Republicans are doing now goes way above and beyond your normal political sleaziness. But Johnny stayed retired. He did not go anywhere. He did not, you know, do any performances of any kind. He just stayed on his own and just did one. And he was a class act on his show. I mean, you look at talk shows nowadays. And my wife doesn't like Letterman because he makes fun of his guests, and he does do that a lot. He's rude.
He can eat you up.
Yeah, he can eat you up, but he can be funny sometimes. I like the bits better than the interviews, the goofy stuff that he does.
It's over the top.
Yeah. Leno, I do not like at all. Leno is just a brown noser, and he doesn't even tell jokes very well, in my opinion. He doesn't have that same kind of, you know, panache.
He should have stuck to the clubs.
You know, I don't know who would have been a better...
Well, the only one that I think has that kind of class, because Johnny could talk to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're talking politics, he could talk to a right-wing guy as well as he could talk to a left-wing guy and still come off a gentleman.
Right.
You know, the only guy I've seen do that is Jon Stewart.
Yeah.
Jon Stewart could talk to Richard Viguerie of the conservative direct mail fame, or he could talk to... I don't know.
Condoleezza Rice.
Condoleezza Rice. Or the left wing. Or
he can talk. He could have Noam Chomsky and Condoleezza Rice on the same show and talk to them equally well.
And he could pull it off.
But, you know, he couldn't do it for 30 years. He could not do what he's doing for 30 years.
He's smart enough not to do it.
But it was a different era when Johnny did it, of course. Nowadays, everything's fast, fast, fast. Nobody's really staying around that long. When Letterman retires, as he probably will in about maybe 5 or 6 years, because I don't know when his contract is up. Leno's contract is going to be up in about another 5 or 6 years. Who's going to come and replace them? There were guys who were doing some really good kind of quirky stuff. Conan O'Brien does some very good stuff. But there's nobody. I mean, before Carson, you had Ed Sullivan, who really wasn't an entertainer like Johnny was. But all Ed did was bring the biggest stars together.
Whole landscape of television has changed anyway.
Yeah.
So
people don't have to have that kind
back
of
then. Story. There was what, three channels or three networks, and you only had Johnny Carson or
no, you had nobody else. Nobody
was
else was doing a talk
else?
Show.
Nobody
started doing talk shows. You know, until Johnny started, you know, petering out, and they were throwing everybody out there. I mean, they had, you know, Arsenio Hall, who actually was not too bad. I didn't mind him too much. But Saturday Night Live did a really funny sketch called Carsenio. They were saying Carson's getting old, and Dana Carvey was doing Carson, but and he had the white hair, but he had it done up like Arsenio does. And he was just talking to Ed, and he's like, Ed, that's, you know, that's not my crowd out there. That's my posse. I have a posse. That is some weird, wild stuff. And it was just so funny. He did it so brilliantly. You know, the premise was that Johnny was trying to appeal to younger, a younger audience. And we, you know, we were talking about this when we were listening to the Pearl Bailey thing, and we only got a few minutes here to talk, but she was dissing the music guy. Who was there was, well, he had a couple. He had Milton DeLug and he had Skitch Henderson. And Milton DeLug,
Skitch Henderson.
Yeah, and Milton DeLug I knew from the Gong Show. He used to be the, he was the conductor for the Gong Show. Milton DeLug and his band were the Thug, and everybody was making fun of the music on the Carson Show, and he got sick of it, and so he got Doc Severinsen. And and that's when, you know, it was big because, you know, Doc Severinsen was a great, you know, trumpeter and a great band leader, you know, and the Tonight Show band was one of the best bands, you know, on television at the time. Wasn't, you know, wasn't a huge band, wasn't an orchestra, but it was great. And Doc just brought a different style to that. I mean, he wore the loud suits. And there was one time I was listening to a clip of him, and he was – Ed was sick one day, so Doc took over in Ed's seat, and he was just cracking joke after joke after joke, and Johnny was just losing it, and he was like, Carson was like, you want to you know, can you get me anything of what you're on so that I can be like that? And, yeah. And Doc said, no, but I'll sell you some. And finally, Carson said, would you like to come over to my place for Thanksgiving? And Doc said, you know, I've known you for how many years, and just now you're inviting me on public on national television. You're inviting me on, you know, to your house, you know. And Johnny's just losing it because of the way Doc is going. And he goes, yeah, you can, so can you make it? And Doc says, no.
Whatever happened to Doc Severinsen?
Well, he still tours. I guess he's just retired. No, he's still alive. Ed McMahon, of course. Well, he's doing that fucking Alf show. Have you seen this shit on TV Land?
How's he doing the Alf show, the Alf Talk show?
He's
like the co-host, the co-sidekick there?
Yeah, he's the sidekick there.
Good Lord.
Yeah, I know. It's like, what the hell are you doing, Ed? Retire.
Is he still with the Publishers Clearinghouse?
He probably is.
Maybe if we got lucky, he'd show up at our doorstep.
Well, Ed was okay. I mean, Ed, you know, Ed did his job. And he was a good sidekick, and he did really good on Star Search, you know, just your basic straightforward announcer. And of course, he used to warm up the audience on the Tonight Show for Johnny. He was the one who warmed up the crowd. Hang on a second. Oh, geez, we're coming to an end here. Everybody, put a stop. I could talk about Johnny all friggin' night, but we better go. Listen,
what
this
a class
is
class act.
Yeah. Anyway, Rick, thanks for being on again. And I got to end
my
this
pleasure.
Real fast. And this is Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe Radio Show, and we will see you next show. Bye.
Joe, I crave a plate of Dave, open a jar of John, don't put anything on, I'll chug a jug of George, I'll sip a mug of Doug, with a creamer of Steve, how many more does that leave? Give me a pot of Scott, heat up a pan of Stan, throw in a handful of Dick, that'll do every trick, open a can of Dan, and make a meal of Sam, but don't give me no mug, cause what I really want's a cup of Joe.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been recorded live at the fabulous Studio Al in Decatur, Georgia, and has been produced by Jove Enterprises, Incorporated. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe Radio Show, is a production of Mr. and Mrs. Vecchio of Brooklyn, New York.
Steve, a mug of Doug,
forever.
We'll do this. We will be right back after this word.